man, here we go again. Up early, feed the dog, out the door, traffic, at the office, boss in some kind of mood today, no time for lunch, annoying coworker, no time to relax, bedtime. Then we gotta do it all again? No way. Because the best way to break up the mundane every day is to play at Wild Rose Casino and Resort. Slots, tables, sports, and a whole lot of perks when you join and play with your club wild card. So, let's play Wild Rose Casino and Resort, Clinton.
Hi, I'm Jim Street, owner of Streets Maintenance. As a licensed, insured, and bonded master plumber, I specialize in all plumbing repairs, including but not limited to water heater and sump pumps to toilet and faucet repairs and replacements. For more information about my business, I'm online at streetsmaintenance.com and Facebook, or give me a call at 400-4483.
Hello there, and welcome to the Hawk Fanatic Hotspot podcast. It's not the mailbag. It's Thursday, not Tuesday. Good start to this podcast so far. I am Rob Howe. If you're watching us on YouTube or listening, the other voice face you see is Scott Docterman from The Athletic. It is Thursday, April the 25th, around 9:15 a.m. Central Time. Got my trusty
J-E-T-S, Jets. Kyle Brady coming up this week today.
Happy NFL draft to those folks that celebrate. It's also Drake Relays getting underway over in Des Moines. A lot going on this weekend. We expect Cooper DeJean to hear his name called in the first round tonight. It's first round only tonight, remember, folks. To second and third on Friday, fourth through seventh on Sunday. And we'll probably have some Hawkeyes go after tonight, but Cooper's the only name we expect to hear tonight. A lot of guys coming back to Iowa instead of trying the NFL waters, so that certainly changes the dynamic there. I see pretty much most of the mocks, Scott, have Brock Bowers going to the Jets. I'm not down with that. I have nothing personal against Brock Bowers. I think he's a great, tight end. He's going to be a really good NFL player. I'm not down with the tight ends in the top 10.
Well, I would take him if I were the Jets, and here's why. I think you think of him as not a tight end. You think of him as a pass catcher. Yeah. And if they could get Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers.
That's who I want. And if you take a couple of hops up, I want one of those guys. Bless you.
Thank you. I apologize for that. I'm like allergic to my own take here. But with Brock Bowers, you can line him up in line, slot, out wide. He's a mismatch wherever he goes. He's like Laporta, but he's probably got a little more athletic ability to him. So I would, if you're looking at a safety valve for Aaron Rodgers, and if he could do for the Jets what Sam Laporta did for the Lions last year, I think you'd take him. But I understand, tight ends, traditional tight ends, no, they're not as valuable as receivers. So
yeah, I'd rather have receiver offensive line, but that's just me. I think defense is cool. And the Bears will be the first on the clock tonight, and the Caleb Williams era will begin. Who's that second pick, you think?
Jaden Daniels to the Washington.
No, I mean the Bears' second
pick. Oh. That could go in any direction. That could be a wide receiver, Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers. It could be a trade down because they're much better than they were a year ago, and they're going to get their quarterback. The question's going to be which direction do they want to go? I mean, they could use a pass rusher on the edge to go alongside Montez Sweat, who's just been phenomenal. They could use a three tech. So I like the guy from Illinois a lot there, but that's more of a trade down possibility. I think if they're at nine and one of those three receivers are there, you take them immediately and don't just turn in the card. If they're not there, you listen to trade downs. Because they only got four picks in the draft. So I think that's something you got to be cognizant of.
Yeah, no doubt. And always an interesting time. Everybody loves their picks for the most part. And then there's the analysts that overanalyze, kind of like what we do with spring football open practice. And we'll do that in a little bit. But let's do some newsy stuff, Scott. And I want to start with the first commitment in Iowa's 2026 football recruiting class. Carson Nielsen, 6'7", 290-pound Sophomore from Waterloo West. Yes, that's correct. 6'7", 290 sophomore at Waterloo West. Really, I encourage people to watch his film. Very athletic. Just the starter kid is there, no doubt about it. Had a really nice offer list. He's the top player in the state for that class. And third year in a row, Scott, Cody Fox, Joey Van Wetsega, Carson Nielsen, 3 years in a row, Iowa's first verbal commitment in a cycle, 24, 25, 26, is an in-state offensive lineman.
It's a good one, too. I mean, this is
somebody. All three of those guys, yeah. I think, have a chance to be badasses.
Yeah, I think Fox will be a really good guard. I think Van Wetsinga is going to be a center.
Yeah.
He's like a Linderbaum. You know, I played high school football against his dad when he was at PV, and his dad was about 2 inches taller, maybe a little bit quicker. He'd been a D1 guy. He was a badass too. And then you look at this one. This is the prototype type. This is exactly what you want. And I talked to Kirk a little bit about him on Monday night. We had him on Iowa Live in Cedar Rapids and kind of in between one of our commercial breaks. I'm like, so it looks like you're going to get some good news here in about a half an hour. You know, I think he's like, yeah, what do you think about that? You know, he's kind of, he's like, I didn't think it'd happen that quick, but he was pleasantly surprised when he got the news. I think it was Saturday is when Nielsen told the coaches. And, yes, you want that guy. That guy is everything that you'd hoped that you would have a number 74 this year that you're not going to get. And I know it's still, you got to wait a couple of years, but he's the real deal. So, you know, good pickup on, you know, a year and a half before he can actually sign.
Yeah. And in watching him and talking to some people, JC Moreau from Strength U works with Carson, and I've been talking with him about him for a while now, and he thinks that Carson is just like scratching the surface. I mean, he's just got so much more. I mean, the natural ability and the athleticism for that size is there, and then the exciting part is that you can mold that into domination, and that, I mean, that's the goal. That's the idea here. But like you said, he's got to get to that point. He's got to work his ass off to get to that point.
Yeah, and this is somebody that Iowa wouldn't be so gung-ho for if they didn't think he could do that. And I think that's something that you're going to look at. And plus, once he gets to campus, I mean, I don't know what his, you know, thought process is. Is he going to be an early enrollee or what? That's still a long ways away. I would hope that, I mean, if you're going to commit while you're a sophomore in high school, I think that'd be a good bet to load up on a few classes here, take your driver's ed in the summer, you know, type of thing. but, you know, I liked what I've seen of him. I think he's going to be he's exactly what you need, you know, which is in-state player. You got him. And he's the best in the state, I think, in that time frame. And so they've got, they're already starting early. And then we know, you know, now the coaches have, They weren't going to hit the road early this week because they were going to kind of wait to see what the portal was going to do among their own players, you know, because they wanted the assistants wanted to be there to talk to them.
Yep.
So which makes sense. It's perfect. And then now
plenty of time
hitting the road and recruiting. And then we go through the big rat race for the next 2 months.
Just want to let folks know, just for an FYI on Carson Nielsen's offer list, reported offer list, Iowa, Iowa State, Kansas State, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota State, Penn State, Tennessee, and Wisconsin. So if you need more confirmation that the kid can play, there you go. There are a lot of high level Power Five college football coaches who believe in Carson Nielsen, and for now, and at least for now, he is a Hawkeye commitment. And we know Scott and I in the fall went up and covered Nick Brooks's commitment up in Cedar Rapids, Kennedy. These things are not firm. They are not in writing. So we hope that this meets its completion and Carson ends up here. But who the heck knows what's going to happen in the next 2 years, not only at Iowa, but in college football in general. So, but that's what we have for today. And we also have Cade Borand, offensive lineman from he was at North Dakota, Scott, prepped at Southeast Polk, visited here for the spring open practice on Saturday and accepted a preferred walk-on. I like this one. I think this kid, he played early at ND, and I know they're not in the South Dakota State, North Dakota State, South Dakota. They're probably the fourth of that group, but that's still a good league with good players. And if he's playing as a true freshman, he can probably play. And the investment's minimal. It's probably NIL investment. Gives you experience, gives you depth. That's what you want.
I think anything, you know, probably the best part for Iowa is this is upside, because their two top centers right now are both seniors, and Logan Jones and Tyler Ellsbury. Mike Myslinski is a guy that everybody wanted and expected, but he's been injured the whole time, and you just don't know, you know, how much longer can they even keep him on the roster, let alone see if he can play, which is really unfortunate because he's a good kid and all, but...
And Van Wetzig is a 25, so he's not here until the 25 season if you're looking at him to be play early as a center. So, yeah, good point.
Yeah. So you've got that, you know, in that area. So here's a guy that has played. You know, he's a freshman All-American. And sometimes freshman All-Americans kind of crack me up because I help compile those once in a while. And it's basically like, did you play? And
you're a freshman. You played as a freshman? You're on.
Yeah, you're a freshman All-American. But it does say something, though, as you mentioned, Rob, because all four Dakota schools are quality programs in the Valley. I mean, they routinely, all of them make the playoffs. Of course, South Dakota State and North Dakota State are by far the two best in that, you know, subdivision. But still, South Dakota and North Dakota State, they've got to be competitive. And he's from the state of Iowa. He's not the Southeast pole lineman that you expected to have on your roster this year, but nevertheless, he's a guy that, you know, if nothing else, if he could be your make the depth chart, possibly rotate, be available, then that's a win. And as you said, preferred walk-on this fall. This is the creative stuff that Iowa is going to have to do. I mean, they have lost a couple of people. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But, you know, for a player like, you know, if somehow there's a little bit of a wave, you know, like four or five more players bolt, then you could probably flip him over to scholarship or whatever. But And this is what everybody else is doing. I mean, there's a lot of schools that are going up to like 15, you know, preferred walk-ons who are basically getting tuition through NIL. So perfect match. And then in January, when the exodus happens, then you can just float them over there.
Yeah, nice pickup. And had interest also, reported interest from South Carolina and Utah. So other schools were interested in him as well. Wasn't just a Southeast Polk, North Dakota, Iowa triangle. There were other schools that were interested in him, but makes sense for him to take his shot at Iowa, being an Iowa kid. Another kid that visited since we last podcasted, Scott, Raylan Sharp, wide receiver from Missouri State, visited here, I believe, Tuesday and finished up yesterday. Scheduled to be at North Texas today. I'd watch out for them. And Fresno on Sunday. So other interest in him as well. Smaller, quicker, slot-type receiver. But as we saw Saturday at open practice, Iowa needs help at receiver.
Remember Damon Powell? You know, that's what this kind of reminds me of. I mean, he's small, no question, but he's just incredibly fast, and this offense needs that. And now that things have changed in the offense, that this is, it doesn't matter that he's not 6'2", 205 and can, you know, jump. I mean, you'd like to have that, but you know, for the most part, this is a guy who's got pure speed and can move and get open. You want somebody who can get open, you know, can beat guys off the dribble and get deep. Yeah. This is a guy who could do that. You know, North Texas, Fresno State, everywhere you go, you're going to have to face somebody with a more proven passing game, because Iowa's is last. But Tim Lester and the offense, they could show you could step in and play against some of the best competition in the country. You can play for us and help us grow and, you know, play for a really good team. Because I think Iowa offensively, and we'll talk about the team and what we saw on Saturday, I think this team is at minimum top 20, but it's got the potential to go to the playoff if the offense comes around. And what you need are guys like Sharp, you know, and is, and if you could fit him in again, think Damon Powell when he was able to do some of the things he did back in what 14, 13 and 14, then that changes the dynamic. It stretches the field. It spaces the field. It allows the running game to work. It allows the passing game to get, you know, yards after the catch. And yes, he's not the optimum size, but when has Iowa ever really operated with the optimum size? Just about anywhere.
Yeah, and it really is. I mean, you got to, hopefully with Tim Lester, and I think there's a possibility for it, that the play calling, at least, I'm not sure how much you switch the scheme from player to player, but at least the play calling, you utilize, you know, if you've got Sharp and Caleb Brown, figure out a way to get both of them in a alignment and figure out how to utilize both of their best skills. And don't just say, okay, we need to have a tall receiver, a medium-sized receiver, and then a short receiver. Let's just get guys out there that can make plays.
Yeah, and let's organize our passing game and our plays around those who can do something positive. If don't, you know, the play of the that makes me still want to bang my head against this desk, Rob, is against Northwestern, where Nico Ragaini ran in motion. He was in a 22 personnel, two tight ends, two running backs, one receiver, ran across from left to right, all the way across the field. At the snap, ran up and ran a go route, you know, and then, you know, he didn't get inside leverage at all on the corner, which it's hard to do because you're running 40 yards across the field and then up, and he had a 30-yard route beyond that into the end zone. The corner had inside positioning. Deacon, of course, threw it inside, and it was an interception in the end zone. And it's like, for, you know, there's so many different things you could say. You could blame the quarterback for the throw and where it was. You could blame the receiver for not finding a way to get open and get him in that spot. Or what I do is, why did you do that? You know, why did you put a receiver, make him run that far, that long in that type of a play and put him in that position where it's almost a non-win? Yeah. That's what I look at, is schematic and play calling. And that's something that Tim Lester can do differently. Find a way, well, let's try to get that route, but let's do it with a tight end. Let's do it with somebody else, not make somebody run all the way across the field and then up. And that's your only receiver in the route. It's ludicrous. So I think that's something that, whether it's Sharp or anybody else, you can do and do better.
Yeah, no doubt. For those that want a little bit more background, Raylan Sharp is from Allen, Texas, played high school ball at Allen, Texas, one of the better high school programs in the state of Texas. His dad is an administrator in that school district that I touched base with a little bit yesterday. And Raylan was an All-American in 2023 at the FCS level. And that was from AP Phil Steele and something called Stats Perform.
It's legitimate. It is.
I know. I'm kidding. Yeah. All-MVFC first team. So he definitely produced last year. 73 receptions, 991 yards, and 7 touchdowns. I think the drawback is what we talked about, Scott. If he looks at it and just says no, looks at, you know, what Iowa receivers have done the last few years and says, no, I'm going to go to a program that's probably not as good, but it's going to get me the football at the Division I level. Because he's moving up from FCS back to the FBS.
Yeah, and it's going to be, this is, the leverage is all in his hands, and he has that opportunity. And I don't think you'd begrudge him either way. Yeah. I mean, if he wants to come here, he wants to test himself against the best players in the country, and he's taking a leap of faith that Iowa's offense is going to be better and he's going to be a big part in it. That's probably the fairest way to describe that. If he's not, if he's looking at North Texas or Fresno State, or if another school comes in with an offer, which I'm sure will happen at some point, then you look at, you know, what's my production going to be? What's my value to this offense? And, you know, if, I mean, Iowa has a chance at the playoff, Fresno State and North Texas probably do not. No. Or if they do, they're that token G5 champion. You know, they have to be the best G5 team in the country to get there. So, you know, but either way, you don't begrudge him, because he may look at it and say, well, the best opportunity for me to get numbers and get recognized and go to the league might be somewhere else. So, you know, you just got to roll with the punches and just not put everything into this one person, which I'm sure they're not. They're looking at others, but this is a good opportunity. And I'm glad that he's on campus. I'm glad Iowa offered him because it means Iowa's serious at that position group.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's plainly obvious, and we saw it on Saturday, that that position needs to be addressed in the transfer portal. Granted, Seth Anderson wasn't out there, and Caleb Brown looked pretty good. I was impressed with how he looked, and I think he's got a chance to really break out this year. But you need, you know, I like how they're using Caden Wetchen too, with some, you know, some jet sweep action, things like that. I think he's another guy you have to figure out a way to get him, the ball in his hands. It's just this group of receivers, Scott, is maybe not traditional. It's I don't want to call them gadget guys, but guys that are good in space, guys that, and Seth Anderson, maybe not as much, but, you know, Wechen, Caleb Brown, if Sharp were to come here, you have a group of guys that you can get creative with, I think. And in lieu of not having those 4- and 5-star ready-made, either out of the portal or out of high school, you've got to be creative with this position to rebuild it. Then you can attract more ready-made talent going forward.
Sure. And this is what happens when you're an entire unit goes scorched earth.
Yeah.
And when you go from, you know, you think back, Rob, to a couple of years ago when you had, let's say that their receiving core, your top three would be Keegan Johnson, Brody Brecht, and Arlen Bruce. Then you got an opportunity to say, we got a veteran group. We got guys at different spots who fit what we want. And, you know, we see it the way that happens, but they don't have it because they all transferred or are now one playing baseball. And that's been that way over and over and over again. I mean, you know, from those 5-year classes from 18 to 22, 9 out of 10 gone. Scholarship guys, Nico was, well, now they're all gone because Nico's gone too. And then, you know, you bring in Oliver Martin and Charlie Jones, they transferred too. So you've got scorched earth. You've got to figure out how to rebuild this within this new offense. And you're taking a bunch of, you know, you're taking flyers on some guys. And, you know, this happens to be one. I think it's a good bet, not to use that word, but, you know, it's a good shot chance. yeah, exactly. For them and for him, you know, because it is a heck of a step up too, going from Missouri State, you know, to the Big Ten. And, but, you know, you look around, you look at the teams that they're going to compete against, you know, Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa State is really good, mm-hmm. you know, Washington, you know, so they've got their work cut out for him there, and he can make that step and be a pretty good performer.
He'd know the first team, Illinois State. He would have some familiarity.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
All right. We talked about acquisition. Let's talk about attrition. Deacon Hill decided to enter the transfer portal after going through spring ball at Iowa, as did Cale Vanderbush, who was he a third year tight end? He's been here 2 years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's going into being a redshirt sophomore.
Yeah, he came in with Ostrenga. So he also decided to exit. Where does that leave them scholarship wise, Scott? Where you got him at?
They're at 87 now.
Okay, so two over.
Two over officially, yeah. And,
but you've got injury possibilities, medicals, I think, still. Yeah. And the window's still open till what? May 1st?
Till the 30th is the last day.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's basically May 3rd. Yeah. But you know, I went through, I'm sure you have too, and kind of identified players that, you know, do they look like they're going to stay or go? And there's still a handful to me that are kind of in that territory. I'd heard one got let go yesterday. I'm not sure which one, but or left, I should say. But, you know, it's to me, whenever you reach that, you're approaching your third year and especially your fourth year, it's time to make a business decision. Either you have a dose of self-awareness and say, I'm not going to the NFL. I don't even know if I'm going to play here, but I'm just going to get my degree and this is the place to do it. Or you say, I want to play football. I have a finite amount of time and I still may not go to the NFL, but I want to get on the field and do something. I think we've seen it time and time again that there are players who've throw up their hands and leave. And then there are others who want to stay. And I don't think there's a bad decision. I think it's a good decision either way. With Deacon, it was unusual, though, you know, because he started 9 games last year and was the number one quarterback in training camp or spring football.
I wonder what he was looking for this spring to give him a sense of whether to stay or go, and what he didn't, what the ultimate, you know, evaluation of his situation was.
I know this didn't come as a surprise to the staff. I guess, you know, without talking to him directly and without truth serum, which is even more important because you're not going to get a lot of truth, is that I wonder if this was the plan all along for him. And it was probably a healthy situation, because if he left in, say, March, then you don't get any football. And this is an opportunity to work with a new scheme and show off some versatility and be a part of it. And he's already on scholarship. And it was certainly a help to Iowa. I know I answered some questions people had with how could he be with the first team? And, you know, all that. I look at it completely different, which is he helped the other 10 guys around him. He helped the rotational guys, because if nothing else, he gets the trains rolling on time.
Yep.
And they can run just about anything with him. And even though the pass might not be complete, even though he may not take off running, that doesn't matter. They need to understand where to go. The receivers need to understand where to go. The linemen. And Marco isn't advanced enough to be able to do that on a consistent basis with the first team, against the first team. Whereas Marco, you know, basically, you know, as Tim Lester said, you know, got the fire hose treatment. He was the quarterback for the second and third teams. So he's getting double reps, you know, and so that's not bad either. So
he's getting, like you said, the appropriate reps with guys that are similar in him in their development timeline. Mm-hmm. Whereas if he's playing against that first team Iowa defense, I mean, that's really hard. And that can stunt his growth, I think, doing that, if he was taking all the first team reps.
Can you imagine going against that defense every day and being in his position and trying to learn an offense? And, you know, and again, Deacon, you know, one of the thing that stuck out to me that Tim Lester said was he understands how to go through his progressions a little bit quicker. And that's important, you know, where to throw the ball. Now, that doesn't mean that he completes it. It doesn't mean it's not intercepted. It just means that the offense gets a better feel with him in there, and they're calling the same plays for him as they would with Cade McNamara or another quarterback. If another one will get on the team, and I expect there to be another quarterback anyway. I thought that was going to happen before Deacon was decided to leave. So this is, you know, I don't see any problem with it. And with Deacon, you know, he got 15 more practices. He got to show some leadership. Now he can go to a level that maybe he's better suited for.
And he was committed to Fordham before he flipped here.
Exactly. You know, and he had 3 semesters at another Big Ten school to go along with, 3 semesters at another one. Hopefully he's got a chance to, you know, if he doesn't have his degree, he's close to it. And, you know, I don't fault him. I think if you're an Iowa fan, yes, you could be. It's not mutually exclusive to be frustrated that if he was playing this year, but also to say thank you for what you did, because I think it was yeoman's work. Somebody had to take those snaps last year, and it was him.
And it was he certainly was one of the issues on offense, but he was far from the only issue. And that starts with the coaching all the way down to, you know, injuries, to poor, you know, lack of development in certain areas and all that other stuff. I mean, you lose, you know, Luke Lachey and Eric All. I mean, he loses 2 really big targets, you know, 2 of his top targets early in the season. There was plenty of things going on there. But transitioning to who they get, I know Sullivan from Northwestern is high on the Hawkeye fan lists. I know there was been talk about the kid from South Dakota that's at Ohio State, but he's not even in the portal.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of guys out there, Scott. I was just sifting through either On3 or 247 Arrivals, one of them that have they do their portal rankings at each position. And I went through, there's a lot of quality in there. Iowa can find somebody in there. And As we said, Tim Lester was in college football 2 years ago for a long time, and he's got connections too. That can help here.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's unfortunate that Jane Rashada is not going to be the one. Yeah. I'm just kidding. He just officially committed to Georgia, but
comes down to Georgia and Iowa.
Yeah, Georgia, and there's some dots in the middle there, but you know, there's still going to be some quarterbacks hitting the portal fairly soon.
Yep.
And it's not over yet. You wonder when is it going to happen and how, but you know, Brandon Sullivan is certainly somebody you want to keep your eye on because he was going to be a starter at Northwestern. So that was a really unusual departure. I think it was an unusual departure for the Wildcats too. And so what is his plans? You know, I don't know, but I mean, I would keep in contact with him, but I wouldn't make a final decision until after the 30th, unless there's a guy that pops on that you really want. And I don't know.
What do you shoot for here, Scott? Because you got to look at the Iowa's dynamic, right? Provided he's healthy, Cade McNamara is QB1. And I think you have to tell the guy that you're recruiting out of the portal that, if that's the case, or are you going to give the guy a chance to compete with Cade?
I think it's both. I think you tell him that he's the starter right now, but we're going to give you every opportunity to win that job. And there are a couple that I know that they like if they enter the portal that you walk in and you say, it's a full blown competition, you know, because you've got to treat them that way because if they're not going to come here to be a backup. And really, Cade McNamara has not earned the chance to be the incumbent solidly. You know, last year it was that way. But I'm not just talking about the injury. I'm talking about his play last year. He's earned the right to be the starter right now. However, if somebody comes in who looks good, you know, let Tim Lester make that call. You know, just, hey, if he's better in this system, you let him go. So I would just say, as of right now, Cade's our starter, but you have the opportunity to win the job.
And there's still a question whether or not he's going to be fully healthy by the start of the season. I mean, you hope that. The timeline looks like he will be, but there's no guarantees with ACL repairs.
Right. I mean, they expect him to be ready in June for workouts, and he's getting close is what they say. That's great.
He looked very limited to us the two times we saw him this spring.
Right. And he's now on month, what, 7 since his ACL, and he should be full go by month 9 for throwing and then month 11 for pretty much everything else. Okay, that's fair. But we're also talking about somebody that's had multiple injuries to multiple knees. You know, over last year it was the torn quad or strained quad or whatever it was, the right one, left ACL. And then he also had, injuries to his knee before that that required surgery, meniscus tear and stuff. So, you know, he's only played in, 8 games the last 2 years combined. So you've got to be careful with this position. And that's why if somebody comes in and they're a junior and they come in from a conference where maybe – or a team where maybe they either got beat out or was close and say, you got a shot. And if they go in and they kill it in August, rolling with a hot hand, you don't owe anybody anything. You're paying people now.
Yep.
You know,
you have an obligation to everybody else on the team. Yeah. It's not just the quarterback. It's not just the guy. I mean, you're trying to be the best you can be for everybody on the defense, special teams, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, players know, they know who's the best.
Yep.
And if you play somebody over somebody else, they know it and they resent it because in most cases, unless you've earned some sort of equity that mandates that you play, and that's, you know, that's different. That's like a Nate Stanley versus Spencer Petras back in 19 type of thing. They know. So I would say they're going to get it. They're going to get a quarterback at some point. And let him fire away. And if Cade's the guy, then great. Yep. You feel good about that. If he's not, or if the other guy is proven to be better and you still need to take time, well, then you take time in September. You know, I mean, the Seahawks important, but Big Ten's big.
Marco doesn't look ready to me.
Yeah.
So I think you definitely need somebody there. And as long as he's cool with another year of getting developed, I'd say you run with it and go that way. And again, you're beholden to everybody on the team, not just any of these individual guys. So, it's got to figure out quarterback and wide receiver before the season starts. You can't run back what happened last year in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely not. Because, you know, the worst part of it is, Rob, that last year was kind of a miracle when you think about it, to average 15 points a game and win all those games. This is the type of year where
the odds of them doing that again are astronomical.
Yeah, you just cannot. You know, you think about the Nebraska game, you know, getting an intercept. I mean, that in every other year, if it happens, the same scenario this year, you're losing in overtime or you're losing in regulation or something. So it's, you got to get that figured out. And, you know, I saw some good things on Saturday, though, from the offense, some things that I thought, okay, that looks a little better. Great. That looks different. And different is always better, especially when it comes to Iowa offense.
We'll talk about that in a minute. That'll wrap up our transfer portal football talk for the week. We'll get into some transfer portal basketball talk here after the break. And then we'll do a little spring football. Still got NFL draft stuff. So a lot to get in here. We're already a half hour in. Want to keep this around an hour. So going to try to jam when we get back from this break. It helps when I bring up when I have the reads ready to go before I start babbling. Support for their podcast comes from Systems Unlimited, celebrating 50 years of providing services to people living with disabilities and mental health needs throughout East Central Iowa. A list of their services and upcoming events can be found at sui.org. That is sui.org. We thank Systems Unlimited for the great work they've been doing in our community for over half a century. And we certainly appreciate their support of the podcast, as we do with the folks you're going to hear from now. Brief break here, and Scott and I will be back on the other side to talk a little what we saw from spring football and take a look at the NFL draft as it pertains to Iowa. Hang in there.
Hi, this is AJ Perez, managing partner at Deere Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Waukee and Iowa City. I'm so proud of our team at both locations. We are committed to one thing, giving our customers the absolute best when it comes to service and a car buying experience, the kind of experience that brings you back. What makes us different? We believe at Deere, we don't just sell cars, we help people buy them.
Do you need a great electrical contractor or fire and water restoration specialist? Well, contact Lance Bolin at LB Electric and LJ Construction in North Liberty. Lance has served the corridor for many years and is ready to help you. Call Lance Bolin at 319-640-1116. That's 319-640-1116. Or visit LJ_construction on Instagram for licensed and insured electrical work, fire and water restoration, and remodeling.
Hey, folks, switching is easy. We do it all the time. We switch on the lights. We switch TV channels. Some of us switch partners while square dancing. Well, that's a stretch, but what's not a stretch is how you can switch and save with State Farm. In fact, State Farm agent Chad Birch right here in Iowa City can switch you over so you can start saving today. Chad and his team are ready to welcome you to the State Farm neighborhood. With Chad Birch, it's easy to switch and save. Just give him a call when you want the real deal. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. So, Scott, you kind of previewed it in the last segment, talking about what we saw from Tim Lester's offense on Saturday. I think that was the focus of most of us there, is what's different, what type of tweaks, how is he marrying his philosophy into what the head coach wants to do, all that good stuff. And I saw some nice things. I saw it looked like they had some different plays for Marco in terms of designed runs. It just looked like there was more going on. There was more than just basic base stuff. There was motion, not a ton, but enough to at least make a difference. And I came away cautiously optimistic, as I've been all off season. And again, you're missing what? Two starting offensive linemen, your starting running back, your second team tight end, your starting quarterback. It's tough to really fully evaluate what we saw Saturday.
Yeah, and I really wasn't, a lot of times with these open practices, you'd like to chart like the quarterback competition,
Yeah.
passes and all that. I didn't even do it. I'm
No, it
like,
wasn't worth it.
and the starting quarterback hit the portal anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
I wasn't worried about that. I wanted to see kind of holistically what does the offense
Yeah.
encompass? What are some things that I could tell? And I guess in the passing game, what I could tell that's different is the spacing and the routes and how they try to get guys open. And it's really that part of it is obvious to me because it seemed like before there were a lot of routes that were run like half speed and they were stuck to them like glue. It was kind of like basketball moving around the perimeter, and that's kind of how they performed. And this time around, because partly because of motion, but also that they ran a lot of 11 personnel and different shades of it, that the route concepts and the scheme was just designed to get use more of the field. And I saw that and I thought, it doesn't matter if the ball gets there or not. It's just I like to see this because opponents they played in such a box. It always felt like that Iowa would on offense, they almost like they played in the inside the hash marks. They just didn't move very much. And that's what I saw. And then running game wise, I think they're going to be pretty good there actually this year. I like what I saw there. They didn't run a lot of motion, as you said. But in one of their scrimmages, I talked to an assistant who said, look, like they had a 67 play scrimmage and 60 of them contained motion. And it was really impactful. It caused some defensive players, veteran defensive players to misfit a lot of run. And it helped the defense just to grow, but also showed that, okay, if they can do that against us and we're really disciplined, then they can certainly do that against somebody else.
Yeah, I asked Quinn Schulte about that after the practice, just kind of ha if the the spring session helped them because a lot of those guys, Higgins and Jack, I mean, they've been in college for so long and they've been seeing maybe not Jackson as much, but Higgins and Schulte and Castro and Jamari Harris and down the list, all these guys that have seen the same Iowa offense for their time here. And he's like, yeah, he goes, it was great. We got prepared. We got to see some different looks. It helped us develop and maybe prepare us better for the season. So there's that kind of collateral impact as well from this offense. And I think, was it Jay who said after that it seemed like the offense was holding back a little bit on Saturday because they knew things were being filmed? Yes, and that makes sense to me. You don't want, I mean, you want to keep as much of this under wraps as you can before the season starts.
Well, one thing we do know, Rob, is and the teams that are on their schedule, they're going to go through your video and they're going to go through
Yeah.
other videos and they're going to watch it. They're going to bring it up because everybody does the same thing. Iowa would do the same thing to Wisconsin or Nebraska or wherever, to ensure that they can figure stuff out. And hey, this is different. And they need to be ready for it. And so why would you give them that opportunity in a public forum to say these are going to be our best plays with best motions? They're not going to. And
You could have that. Who's the guy from Michigan? Connor, what's his name? He may have been here.
Stallions, yes.
Yeah, you could have had
Yes.
some Connor Stallion knockoffs in the stands shooting an
Yeah.
Iowa video.
Yeah, I'm sure he was sitting right there on that side of the field, but cold.
Yes, it was cold.
Yeah. But no, by and large, I was impressed that it looks like changes have happened. I'm not going to say yes, this we're skeptical naturally so on anything, but it looked to me not like we're going to run Kirk's offense with a little bit of frosting on top. It looked like it was legitimately Tim Lester's offense.
Yeah, a lot of guys out on defense too, which kind of compromises evaluation when you're looking at that stuff as well. But good depth on defense. I was kind of happy with what I saw from some of those backup linebackers that have just kind of been waiting their turn. Jaden Harrell, Carson Scherer. Some of those guys took noticeable steps forward, I think. And that's good for this team too, because I mean, all things being equal, these guys stay healthy. Fisher, Higgins, Jackson are your guys, but you know, it's nice to have those other guys because there are injuries, and it's great to have depth. It looks like they have quality depth on that second level of the defense.
Yeah, I agree. I like Harrell is going to be a guy that, you know, he's kind of the same type of player that we've talked about with Higgins over the years.
He waited his turn.
Waited. And it's like, I'm frustrated that I can't play, but I'm getting in a little bit here and there. And then you look at Shire, to me, if there's any of them that can kind of break through, I could see him becoming the Leo. Mm-hmm. I could see him beating out Kyler Fisher at that role. You know, Jackson Rexroth, who's a walk-on.
Another guy I should have mentioned.
Yeah, he's in that same boat. Anybody younger than that, I don't know about. I don't know that they are in the category. Because, you know, Keeter played some. I like him as a defensive end, frankly.
Yeah,
I think that's where he needs to go.
But, and I think it marries better with the wrestling.
Yeah, because then his weight, he can get his weight up. And it's hand fighting.
Yep.
It's physical. Not that linebacker isn't, but I don't know that he'll be able to get a chance to play because I think the other guys that are ahead of him, the Harrells or whatever, they've got the equity to step in next year. And the guys that are coming in behind him, those true freshmen.
The influx of this in the 24 class is going to be impactful.
They're fucking good. And I don't, that's the first time I've dropped an F-bomb here today, but they're fucking good.
Now I'm going to have to put the explicit language on when I upload this to Anchor. Now, even when we curse our asses off, I never put the explicit language on there. But they did catch me on YouTube, Scott, because I ran the video from Saturday, and the music got me flagged on YouTube. So it's okay here. Man. It was like other countries that – so people in Finland, I don't think, can watch the highlights from Saturday's Iowa Open.
Oh, no.
I forget what I meant to remember what song got me flagged too, but that just a side note. Be careful if you're shooting highlights of football where they're playing music because you're going to get caught.
A Dirt Road Anthem by Jason Aldean.
Yeah. Yes.
Back in Black by AC/DC. Yeah. I am there with you. I think that they've got six quality linebackers right now. And then the young ones, the three coming in, my guess is two of them play immediately on special teams. And one, they try to redshirt one. And then, you know, it's just to have a little bit of stagger there, but they're going to play. They're different. You know, they're athletically, they're in the Jack Campbell category. So you just be ready for them.
Yeah, no question. And they'll get here in June and start to – that's why I wonder if linebacker is one of those positions where we could see some attrition here in the next couple of weeks, Scott. And it's weird, though, because that dynamic is the guys that are already here don't probably understand or have enough information on those guys that are coming in and comparing themselves to that. They won't know until the summer – when they see them in conditioning and then in camp in August, and that could lead to an exit after, you know, during the summer camp or after summer camp before the season as well. So this thing doesn't just stop on April 30th. This is a continuous, you know, it's continuous roster management 12 months out of the year.
And with some of these players, Rob, that we're talking about that are lower end linebackers, they're not going Power Five. They're not going FBS. They're going FCS, and that's not as an issue. So if one of the backups, we won't use a name, but decides, you know what, it's time, and I'm not going to play, and they go to UNI. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think it makes sense for them to make their decisions now while they have the most options on the table, and. You know, and you know, one good thing about Iowa, they're always up front during the recruiting process. They're up front with this. They're not really pushing anybody out, but they're presenting the options and opportunities.
And letting them know where they stand, what their view is, and of the coaches let them know how they feel about them and where they are in terms of pecking order, and then they make a decision based on that. Because there are some guys, like you said, that are like, well, fuck it, I'm. You know, whatever on the depth chart, I'm going to stay here, bust my ass, and move my way up. There are people with that mentality, and then there are other people like, I don't want to take that risk. I want to go somewhere where I know I can play.
Exactly. And it's neither one's a wrong decision. No. You got to do what's best for you. I mean, if you're going into your junior year as a linebacker and you're third team at best, and you're probably going to get passed there, you've got to make that decision. Like, hey, I'm two semesters away from graduating.
Yeah.
You know, I really want this degree. It makes sense to have it from here. I like being a part of this team. That's worthwhile, you know, if that's what you feel. Now, if you say, I only got two more years left, you know, to play college football, I want to make sure that I have a chance to get the most out of it and just play, then, you know, then probably transferring is the way to go. So I don't know. I've seen, you know, several players, I think, that are on that list. The ones that are, you know, a little older, or the ones that maybe have invested a lot, or they're from the state of Iowa, that you kind of go, and then the younger ones are the ones that aren't from Iowa, that they're here to play football. And then you start to wonder, okay, is this for you? I mean, Cale Vanderbush is kind of in that ballpark. He's from Indiana. He's at least
hurt. He was hurt fourth. Early.
Yeah.
So that stunted his development.
He's at least fifth on the depth chart with Lachey, Ostranga, Ortworth, Johnny Jacuzzi, you know, and then you have younger ones like Hoffman there and Weeper.
May have gone ahead of him by now.
Yeah, right. And so it makes sense, you know, hey, I'm here for football. It's not working out the way I wanted it to. It's time for me to move on. And, you know, Bostic was a surprise because they gave him an opportunity, and he had the opportunity, and he chose not to. But there are others. There's a handful of others, I think, that are in that. You know, either they didn't play or they didn't play well the other day, and they're in that. Your third team at best. What steps are you going to take?
And people, like you said, that have been just can't get away from the injury bug. You know, and we saw it with who was the offensive lineman from Illinois? Really, the highly regarded one. Why can't I think of his name? Began with a D.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But, you know,
David Davikoff,
you know, and that's just, you know, Griffin Little. Those are guys, you know, there are some guys like that. And we're not, I mean, could be Mislinski. I don't know. Has he gotten to that point yet? But there are guys like that on the roster that have trouble staying healthy that may just get to the point where, you know, I want to be able to walk when I'm 30. Yeah. I want to be able to, you know, play with my kids and my body's breaking down. It's a violent sport.
Yeah. That's the thing, you know, 3 years, and it, as frustrating as it is for the coaches, being hurt sucks for them because it's a lot of rehab. It's a lot of, not only are you there for practices and you're not really working that, doing that, but you got to be there for rehab hours in advance and hours afterwards. And, you know, and if you're talking about a surgery, you're going to have to go through the surgery and don't eat for 12 hours before you're in here and you're in recovery and you're on crutches. And you go through that a couple of times, you start to wonder, is this worth it? You know, do I really need to do this? And, you know, and generally there are a couple of players who kind of break through from that injury situation early in their careers. I think Logan Lee was one of them that, you know, was really injured. You know, Mislinski, I think, has the talent. So he's not really in the same category to me. This is more of a, you know, does he want to play and can he play? You know, because he's certainly capable if he's healthy. You know, and Iowa had that issue a couple of years ago before he passed away with the guard, Cody Ince, you know, who had to leave before his senior year. He was just injured too often. And it's like, it's too bad. You're an NFL calibered lineman, but, you know, again, this is a different sport. This isn't basketball. I mean, the injuries are crushing here.
A lot of layers to roster management these days, and a lot of the same considerations for student athletes on how they want to use their years of eligibility. Some injured, some looking to, you know, play more than they have, some willing to stick it out and contribute on special teams and do whatever they can to help teams win. And like Scott said, there are no right and wrong answers here. There's a lot of gray area. And it's a lot different than it's been in the past with the portal and NIL and all the other stuff. So there's a lot going on, and that's why we spend so much time talking about it. Let's transition over into the NFL draft, Scott. Seeing a lot of Cooper DeJean to Green Bay, he fits their system talk. Do you subscribe to that? And do you think he lasts till 25?
It's a great question because he fits a lot of schemes, just depending, but not necessarily the same position for every scheme. And that's what makes it really interesting. Like when you look at guys like, Green Bay, for instance, or Indianapolis, he could fit there. Detroit loves the guy. You know, Minnesota is less so when it comes to him at corner. But I think Green Bay to 25 is kind of the safe bet. But I also wouldn't be a bit surprised at all if Philadelphia at 22 or if Detroit moves up for him or something like that. So I think that's really something to think of. So I don't know.
I mean, he's such an attractive player because of the versatility. I see people saying, well, do you want to spend a high pick on a guy who's going to be a safety and you're not sure what level of safety he's going to be? I look at it the other way. I got a guy that can play corner in some, in some sets. I got a guy that can play in the slot. I got a guy that can play safety. I got a guy that can return the hell out of punts. I mean, to me, NFL 53-man roster, you've got a limited amount of space. He's an ideal pick to me, especially in that, 15 to 25 range.
No question, because maybe he's not your prototype outside corner for what you want to do. If you're a man team, you want somebody with long arms, with right. quick hits, that can hips, that can turn and run and bump and do all that. Okay, I can see that. That's, because you do want somebody who fits that description. PJ right. Tampa is probably a better choice in that regard. However, if you're a team like Detroit, which I think is like matchup more, mm-hmm. that maybe if you're in a 4-3, maybe he lines up as an outside corner if they're heavy with two tight ends, or if they're they're running three or four wide receivers, then you're a nickel. Maybe if you're in a short yardage situation, you're a safety. He's good at all of those. He can do all of those things. Now, is he a thumper? No, but he's a good tackler. He's fast. He's not elite.
He's still pretty young, Scott. I mean, he's only 3 years out of high school, too.
Right. But the one thing I will give him over everybody there is he has the best ball skills out of any player in that secondary. Not in the draft. Shit, you can put him in that, category on in pass receiver. And as a punt returner, he's got no peer. So if you're the Detroit Lions, and this would really, the draft's in Detroit, so you want to make a splash. There you go, like 21 or 23, you trade up, and you draft that guy who can play multiple positions for you in your defense, return punts, and electrify your fan base. Shit, that's exactly what you need. And what's fascinating to me, Rob, is he would be the third defensive back in Iowa history to go in the first round.
Yeah, I found that hard to believe. Somebody told me that yesterday, and I was like, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. You have Craig Clemens back in 72, who went to the Chicago Bears, and then you have Tommy Knight way back in, Hayden Fry's era, which is crazy to think about all the great defensive backs that Phil Parker has produced, and none of them have been in the first round. That's just amazing.
Bob was the highest, right? Sanders, was he the highest of, and then Josh Jackson?
Might have been Jackson, actually.
Two were second. Both of those guys were second rounders. I know that.
Yeah, they were second rounders. I do have that list here. I keep them all.
But yeah, that was surprising to me when I heard that, no Kirk Ferentz, Phil Parker defensive back had gone in the first round, but I was like, they haven't.
Yeah. I mean, Jackson and Sanders were the only second rounders.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And then you have Ojemudia was a third, Spivey, Fletcher.
What was Desmond, fourth?
Fifth. Desmond Riley Moss was a third rounder. Yeah, he fell. Riley Moss was a third rounder. So there's it's still some really quality guy. I mean, Micah Hyde was a fifth rounder.
Geno was seventh.
Geno was seventh, you know, had what, seven interceptions last year.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
so yeah, I mean, it's not that they haven't had good defensive backs in the NFL. The NFL teams just haven't chosen to take them in the first round, and that's, you know how the game works, Scott. You cover this a lot closer than most of us. It's a lot of it. It's appearance too, right? And you're a GM. You don't want to be too risky. You want to kind of fall in line with the consensus a lot of times. And that's why I like teams like Baltimore, who are like, fuck the consensus. I'm going with guys that Tyler Linderbaum's arms are short my ass. We're taking him, and he's going to be our starting center. And I like teams that roll like that.
You know, teams like that, you know what they do? They don't really stray from what college fans understand.
Yeah.
It's like Kyle Hamilton, he's an awesome player at Notre Dame. We're going to draft him 14th. And everybody else is going, well, you know, but he's got this. And, you know, no, they draft the best players. And then what do? They're successful every year. I mean, Bob Sanders should have been a first rounder. Why wasn't he? Well, he's 5'8". But I can tell you this, talking to Bill Polian about him, he was like, this guy, you know, we were, you know, he was stewing. He was freaked out. He wasn't going to be able to get him. You know, he's like pacing the floor. And his son talked about that once, and just until he got Bob Sanders, because he's that kind of an impact player. And, but, you know, he can't be a first rounder. He's only 5'8". You know, that's just, it's silly.
Put on the film. Just watch the film. I mean, unless somebody's like 5'2", then I could see you having some reservations. But you put on Bob Sanders' college film, or, you know, even DeGene. I mean, you put on his college film. I mean, it's crazy.
Right. And so good teams find good players.
Yeah.
And they don't really say, because anybody that really rises up that you're like, you didn't have any interceptions. You only had two breakups last year, but you run a 4.3 and you're 6.1 and you're 180. It's like, well, why didn't you do anything last year? You know, yes, they may not have thrown towards you, but you still need to make some plays. And
check out the high school basketball video.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Although, did you see that today?
I did see that.
Okay.
I saw it yesterday. I haven't seen an update today. Have they set up the one-on-one?
No, I don't think so yet.
let's not do that. Let's. I know we like different things like that. Let's not do that. But anyway, that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, just Google DeGene Caitlin Clark, and it'll pop up for you. Rest of the draft, Scott, I don't want to take up a ton more time here. But I do want to talk about these guys because they've worked their ass off to get to this point in their life. You said before we started recording, you expect Torrey Taylor to be the next one off the board and likely fourth, probably a third day pick. Are you thinking
third day for sure? Saturday, and it'll be fourth or fifth round is my guess. Okay. There's about four or five teams that are in that wheelhouse for him. I would say a lot of them are in this part of the world, Chicago and Green Bay being at the top. New Orleans has one of the worst punters or, you know, situations. I mean, you know, I went through like the Bears, like, the, you know, what they had, and that one makes a lot of sense. They were like 31st in net punting. They were one of the highest teams in touchbacks. Dead money, they're at like $38,000, which is, you know, like you and me decide to put a nickel and, you know, on the change drawer at the coffee shop or something. So, you know, and he's a guy, you know, we don't have to argue it to ourselves here, but
people that are listening to this podcast understand his value.
Yeah. He's like, and so some people may go, oh, fourth rounder for a punter. Well, we know what kind of weapon he is. I mean, if he does the same thing, say with the Chicago Bears that he did with the Hawkeyes, you're forcing on maybe not every possession, but on four possessions a game, you're having your opponent have to go an extra first down, you know, because of the way he spots the ball, you know, that he kicks the ball out of the eight instead of it going out of bounds or going in the end zone for a touchback. That's a win for your defense. That's an extra defensive possession in a lot of ways, you know, that you're helping out and forcing them to go one more first down. So I expect him to go fourth or fifth. The other two,
He's a cold weather punter too. So yeah. If you're a cold weather team, you don't have to worry about if he's been punting in the SEC. You know, and if you're a warm weather team, you're like, shit, he can punt in the cold. He can punt for us. So
exactly.
That opens up more doors for him as well. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, you look at some of the wind conditions he had to go through at Madison and and West Lafayette, the cold, intense cold in Minneapolis. Iowa's been cold before when he's punted there. Rain. Yep. You know, he's done it all. And then sunshine, too. And yeah, when you're talking about an SEC punter versus, you know, or a Mountain West punter, you know, that have really big numbers, it's because, well, it's very warm. And then versus the air is lighter.
Yep.
You know, with him, he's had to go ground control. So we all know how good he is and how good he's going to be for that team.
Consistency, so, man. Just consistency. Yeah. I there were so few times when he punted where you're like, wow, he was off on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, you could probably go back and count him on one hand. He's so consistent.
Yeah, there was like one or two games. Oh, that's it. You know,
where he didn't hit a good one.
Yeah, it's like Northwestern at Wrigley. You know, you're like, what? What happened there? You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the other two, I expect to be fifth through seventh, and it's just going to be kind of – there's not a lot of difference, I'll say this, between those guys in rounds five through seven and the free agents that come after. So it's going to be about who did well on their interviews, how do they fit with your team. And, you know, I expect Logan Lee to go – and he, you know, he even worked a little bit at tight end for some teams. You know, probably sixth round. Eric All, kind of the same way. He's got some, he needs to work on, or he's got some time. Although I did see he's sprinting now, so that's a good sign for him.
I think, but somebody's going to get a steal with him.
Yeah. He's a kind of guy, Rob, that I think if you draft him, like you have like four picks in the sixth round or something, and you take a flyer on him and then put him on the PUP list, and then midseason he's finally healthy. Maybe year two or three, it's like, wow, where'd this guy come from?
Yep.
You know, so
I'm not going to compare him to George Kittle, but Kittle's a guy that kind of just fell down because of not being able to stay on the field consistently at Iowa health wise. That I would make the parallel with All. Yeah. I don't think All's anywhere near what Kittle is, but I think guys can benefit, or teams can benefit from that, from other teams just immediately crossing him off their list because of the injury history, and then he goes somewhere and pops.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, those two, Logan Lee and Eric All, are completely different situations, which is kind of interesting, the strategy of late round draft. Yeah. With Logan Lee, if you're a team that maybe you're up against the cap and you're going to – we need a late round guy, a cheap guy to make our team. And they don't have to be great. They just need to go in and play 20 snaps a game and play on the special teams and don't do anything stupid. Well, Logan Lee's your guy. He's safe. You know what? He maybe has a really low ceiling, but he's got a good floor. So it's like, hey, sixth, seventh round, we know what we got. You know, we're Minnesota Vikings. We got high, you know, our cap is tough. Let's just play. Eric All is on the other side. Hey, we've got a lot of room here to play with. You know, we don't necessarily need this guy right now, or we got a lot of picks and, you know, we stash this guy. You know, that's the kind of guy you want. You're not going to draft him if you need him to play, but you want him to play in 2025 and, you know, maybe late season. So I think that's fascinating. And then there are two guys, Rob, that I think are, capable of making a team that probably won't get drafted. Joe Evans being at the top of the list. You know, he's worked out at fullback and defensive end. Obviously, we know. I mean, his 41-inch vertical should get him drafted, frankly. But I think he'll probably end up playing fullback, and he'll be like a four-tier special teamer, and voila. And then the other
Christian Welch has done a nice job making it as a special teamer.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's with the Packers now, and, you know, he's now in, what is he, year
four?
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Not bad.
No. And then Noah Shannon, who I know we all kind of think highly of, and I wrote about him.
Nobody I'm rooting for harder, and that's no disrespect or commentary on anybody else in this draft.
Mm-hmm. I wrote about him yesterday in my story about the gambling situation and used him as kind of the human element to that. And it was a $50 bet on women's basketball and ended up costing him an entire season. And I talked to Charlie Baker with the NCAA about it. And he now kind of acknowledges that, well, maybe we need to retool some of this stuff. Well, it's too late for him.
Yeah.
But on the other side, and kind of looking at it from the other view, is he that may have actually helped him in his NFL career, because he had shoulder reconstruction. He had a torn labrum. It took him, 7 months to recover to where he was even allowed to practice. And then he had to sit out. Now he's completely healthy. It's a full year plus, since other than some practices in October. And, he's had some conversations with the Raiders, with the Colts, with the Vikings, worked out for the Bears and probably not going to get drafted, but I expect he'll get signed. And then after that, he'll put his best foot forward. He'll be a guy that, all he does is do the right thing. Yeah. we're rooting for him because he's always been a stand-up young man and really got was collateral damage in the whole situation last year.
And he really he handled himself so well during that, even though his life was being impacted so much. He had such a good attitude through all that. That's something I think, we talk about how much investigation NFL teams do into like guys' personalities and their makeup and things like that. There's just no question with that kid.
Yeah. That's all. Anybody that does any investigation is going to come up and go, wow, he's a great kid, great young man. And, even talking to him after the fact, I talked to him earlier this week because I had a couple other questions for him. And all I had to do was, he could have blamed anybody and he would have been justified, righteously justified about this. And instead, no, I made the mistake. And, the problem is that, and he told me this, that it's like getting, you're getting a speeding ticket and losing your car for a year.
Yeah.
And, the crime didn't fit the punishment. But other than that, he kept it all in stride. He kept a good attitude. He was great for his teammates. As you can imagine with a story like that, there was a lot on the cutting room floor that wounded me personally, he's just a quality young man. I expect him, if he doesn't make a team, I expect him to make a practice team. I think he'll be a quality player for somebody for at least a couple of years.
Yeah. It's on my to-do list to read that story. I didn't get a chance yesterday, but check that out on The Athletic, Scott's story on Noah Shannon and the gambling investigation. It's funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting to watch the developments, like Reggie Bush getting his Heisman Trophy back because the NCAA is, things have changed a little bit now. Yeah. Or you think about locally, somebody like Bon Chimansky, who loses his job at Iowa for helping a student athlete pay her rent.
Mm-hmm.
Now NIL takes care of that and he's fine, probably.
Yeah.
It's just look at Kelvin Sampson got busted for. I mean, it's different. And the saddest thing, and you mentioned it, Scott, is you can't retroactively give these people their time back. You can't give Noah Shannon a season back in college. And that forever impacts his life. I hope you're right. I hope his ability to recover last year turns out to be a blessing in disguise, so it helps him at the next level. But he's always going to wonder what it would have been like to play on one of the greatest defenses that Iowa's ever had, and that opportunity was taken away from him.
Exactly. And it's really unfortunate. And to his credit, to Ferentz's credit, to the team's credit, it was basically like he was an injured player.
Mm-hmm.
They kept him around. And I mentioned it. I don't know if it got cut or not because it was a very robust editing process. But
you sound wounded by this.
There's some pain inflicted on this. But, the things that people don't see behind the scenes that – Yes. It's taking some time, but among the things, like, you know, his teammates were, you know, Aaron Graves was saying how he would sit next to him in the meetings because he would point out different things for him. You know, this is, you know, and really help him guide mentally, you know, and then Logan would do the same thing. So they was like, wow, I've got like two of these guys. And, you know, just, you know, here's a guy that you think about it, Rob, back when he was denied a second time in early September, why didn't he just drop out of school? He already had his degree. Yep. He was just there for play football, take a couple classes. No, he decided to stay in school, work as a student assistant and help his team and stick with his team. I mean, that's the ultimate teammate. And, you know,
hopefully that's rewarded.
There's, you know, one of the things I'll say this about Iowa that it doesn't get enough discussion and it, there's no reason why they should, but man, we've been around some quality players and people.
Yep.
And you think of the, you know, a Joe Evans, salt of the earth, tough guy, but give you the shirt off his back, you know, and Noah, the stand up guy. And, you know, Parker Hesse was that way, you know, just true leadership. And
Kayvon.
You know, Kayvon Merriweather, you know, just on and on and on that they, you know, Jay Higgins is that way. It's just, you can go back through just about any team. You know, I always say that you can spot shitheads anywhere, but there aren't very many of them, you know, here. They're all pretty good guys. And so they've done a really good job there of pushing those or cultivating those relationships. And that starts at the front end with recruiting.
Yep. I think most of the Iowa programs do a pretty good job of that. Earlier on in our careers, I remember us covering more off the field issues. Don't see that much anymore. And that's nice. That's a very good reflection on the coaches at the University of Iowa that they, you know, from Fran to Lisa, Rick Heller, Joey Woody, Kirk, all of those people produce really good athletes and really good people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, that first decade of the 2000s was filled with a lot of off-field stuff, especially the highest profile teams, football and men's basketball. You really haven't seen that much. And, you know, to their credit, you know, you go back through and, you know, there's some really quality young people. And now they're not as young as they used to be, but...
So that's the NFL draft that starts tonight. We're going to wrap up here with a little men's and women's basketball talk. Should mention that the Iowa baseball team did sweep Rutgers last week, got to 9-6 in the league, have series left with at Nebraska and at Illinois, two of the better teams in the league. So opportunity is there, and we'll talk more about that as we move forward in the spring, but wanted to get that out there. We talked last week about Lucy Olson and Drew Thelwell, I believe. I think they were already in the fold. Lucy Olson made it official this week, signing yesterday, Wednesday, April the 24th. We also found out that Matt Cross, a forward-type, post-type, big guy-type that Iowa would like to add to its roster out of UMass, visiting Iowa and Wisconsin, and Thelwell addresses the need at point guard, and if they could somehow secure a commitment from Cross, I think that would address the front court, and then they roll.
Yeah. So do you think, you know, I know he's more of a small forward. I mean, he's pretty good, but does he fit exactly what you're needing? And what does this say about Peyton Sanford, you know, because he's kind of that same position?
Yeah, I think he's a little bit more flexible. I think from what I've watched, I think he has an ability to help you rebounding. And Peyton did that too. And I don't know if you can have enough of those wing type players in this age of basketball. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what Fran's feedback or position is with Peyton, whether or not which way he's leaning. I'm sure they have a really good relationship, so I'm sure the communication lines are open, so he would know if Peyton were to choose to stay in the draft. I think he's coming back. And I think if you add Thelwell and Frost to the guys that are returning, I think the pieces are there for a successful team. How those pieces work together, it's hard to know. I mean, we really didn't know coming into this year, you know, how Kricke would fit in. And it was kind of, let's say, a roller coaster ride with him, but it seemed like it took like a lot of the year for him to kind of get acclimated. What you're hoping with Thelwell and Cross, if he were to commit, that they come in and just, Kricke was really good early, then the Big Ten came. You need guys that you get out of the portal, experienced guys that are going to be consistent for you throughout the whole season. And that's what they need from the portal.
Yeah. That's, you know, he's what, he's been in the portal a lot.
Yeah.
You know, he's what, he went to Louisville and Miami and UMass and now Iowa. But you
and
know,
you
that's
one. You don't want to put a scarlet letter on, but it's definitely a red flag.
Yeah. But, you know, he averaged 15.3 points per game last year and 8 rebounds. You can use those numbers even if you say it's the A-10. A-10 is kind of in that borderline. It's not necessarily a power conference, but it's not bad either. I mean, they're pretty good. So UMass is a program that's had a history and a tradition, and he was first team all conference and, you know, shot really well from the field, probably needs a little more improvement from the, you know, perimeter. But that said, you've got other guys who can do that too. So it would make sense. You know, I know he's going to what, Wisconsin today and Iowa tomorrow. And so if he could be that last piece, as you said, and how does Iowa shape up then? I mean, you know, kind of two mid-major guys that had decent years, good years for their conferences. You know, how does that parlay into Big Ten? We won't know. You know, we won't know for till, you know, January. So you can just address it now.
It's, you know, it's happening all over. Wisconsin's been decimated by the transfer portal, and it's happening in other places too. I think, Scott, though, as much as we've talked about the NIL with men's basketball and how it needs to be improved, if they could get Cross and Thelwell with the current situation, I think that's doing pretty well, because you're not bringing other Power Five guys in with what you have right now in terms of resources. So I think that would be a pretty good job in the portal, getting guys that were productive on the level below where you are, and hopefully with that experience can make that transition. And that's what you hope. We see a lot of mid-major guys that do really well at the Power Five level.
Oh, sure. And a lot of them are good, you know, beyond that anyway. So players are good. So I think they can step right in. And plus, I think you're going to have to pay more with Peyton Sanford if he does come back. I think you're, you know,
rightfully
Owen Freeman.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think he's a first team all Big Ten guy. And, you know, Owen Freeman's in that same boat. And yep. You probably should. You should probably take care of him in advance.
I think you could throw Josh Dix in there.
Yeah. And I think and Iowa has a little more money than what has been let on from what I've been gathered, what I've been told recently. So
I think there's been a little bit of a push with all the talk that's going on, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's good to talk things into existence.
Yeah, there's some fascinating behind the scenes conversations and developments.
A podcast behind the scenes podcast that would get a lot of run.
That would get more than Morehouse and I talked about that once when we were coming back from a football game that they lost, and we're like, this is the podcast that everybody would pay to listen to. Yeah. You know, so but no, that it's. I think these two would be good. And if you could bring Sanford back, then you feel like you've got a pretty good shot. And I think Cooper Koch is going to be a really good player. I think he'll step in and be a really good player first year, whether he starts or just comes off the bench. I think he's going to be a massive improvement at that position group.
I think both of the true freshmen are rotational pieces. I think Tajo could get in the rotation as well. The two guys they have coming in should be contributors, and I agree with you, Koch could be more than just a contributor this first year. We saw it with Owen Freeman last year. It's not guys that are good can come in and impact your team right away.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Cross were to come in and you were able to keep, you know, Sanford, and you have Thelwell, and you have Dix and Freeman. You probably feel pretty good about that. I mean, as your starters, but it's really more than that. You know, you have Dembele and Koch and who am I forgetting?
Bryce here? Sanford.
Yeah, Bryce Sanford, Brock Harding, you know. Yep. So then you feel like, well, you know, you got a team that can compete, you know, win, go to the NCAA tournament. I don't know yet, but I think you got a team that can compete for it, which I think is, you know, probably a little bit higher than what they were this year.
Yep, no doubt. And we'll see. We'll talk about the Matt Cross visit and where things stand with that next week. And I'm sure we'll have plenty next week as the portal closes. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of activity between now and when we talk to you guys next, which will be May 1st, I believe, is next Thursday, believe it or not. Wow. May Day. We'll be podcasting on May Day. Scott, what do you got in addition to the Noah Shannon? What do you guys got going on over at The Athletic? I know you guys kill it for draft coverage.
Yeah, my next couple of days are going to be, you know, in the pit. I've got to finish. I've been so busy, I haven't been able to. I got to finish these synopses of all like the players who are going to get drafted like in the first couple of rounds. And then tonight, me and Nick Baumgartner are greats. I got the odd picks. He's got the even picks. So we've got to, you know, apply grades and rationale to each one of these tonight and tomorrow. Tomorrow will be faster, you know, because tonight's 10 minutes. Used to be 15, and that was like astronomical. It took forever. But now it's 10 minutes, and then it's – and tomorrow's 7 and 5. So tomorrow will be like – so we got that. And then Saturday will be a bunch of wrap-up stuff and other things. So I'm pretty much – you know, in the draft war room here. And then, you know, earlier this week, one thing we haven't mentioned and I wrote a little bit about was just that Ed Podolak stepping aside after 42 years in the booth. Iowa has as rich of a tradition in radio as any, you know, school in the country, you know, based on the early guys, you know, Zobel and Brooksy and Ron Gonder and there were some really good color analysts too, but Podolak's different because he's kind of transcended both eras.
Yep.
And very relatable guy, had some stuff in his past, you know, but that didn't stop.
Ed likes to have a good time.
Yeah.
he's lived a full life.
Yes.
And he's not done yet.
He's not done yet. You know, his life is like his buddies, you know, Jimmy Buffett, you know, before he passed.
It's like a Hunter S. Thompson, Jimmy Buffett kind
of
operation. With Ed, but yeah, entertaining guy, knows the game and will be missed. And we'll see. I think there are some good options out there to replace him. We'll see which direction they go.
Yeah. They're a ton. Obviously, you know, fans really want a former player. I think players who tend to be around the program tend to get the most traction with fans. I wouldn't necessarily go that route. You know, I mentioned it before. If I was to pick a guy, I would go with Chad Greenway. You know, when he was playing with the Vikings, he was really good on radio in the Twin Cities markets. He had his own show. He very articulate, can break it all down. Plus, I'm sure Lisa would give her thumbs up, you know, right away. But so I think there'd be a lot there with them. But, you know, and Anthony Heron, I know people have talked about him, but, you know, doing Chicago Bears, doing Big Ten, doing NBC, you know, that's a lot. That's
your Anthony. I say this with confidence that he's interested, but wants to see if he could fit that into what he's currently doing or most of what he's currently doing.
Yeah.
I don't know logistically if that can happen. That's the thing. Ed didn't really, and even Bobby Hansen, they have flexibility in their schedules to be able to do that. That's what's going to make this an interesting hire, I think, because if you look at a guy like Anthony, even a Paul Burmeister, somebody that's in the business, the Iowa radio gig is a part-time job and you can't justify just doing that if you lose what those guys have.
Well, exactly. You know, like Anthony is in the booth for BTN and for NBC. And, you know, he's also heavily involved in Chicago Bears coverage on The Score on Channel 30, WFLD 32 in Chicago. SiriusXM. He's got a lot of gigs, and he can still do some of those, but not, you know, I mean, after a game on Saturday, yeah, you'd have to fly back, you know, get to
Chicago
and do all that. And that's a lot to ask. Not that he can't do it, because he's brilliant. He does an outstanding job. But, you know, people have talked about Matt Bowen, you know, kind of same boat. You know, he coaches high school football. And anyway, that'd just be my 2.5 cents worth.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of guys that are good and capable, and whoever they get, I'm sure, will do a good job. And it'll be different because Ed was around for so long. Yeah. It's going to be an adjustment period. But I think people certainly will be able to embrace whoever the new guy is. I want to ask you this, Scott. I know we're trying to get out of here, but Tripp has been asking me this on the mailbag, and he caught me this morning when I tweeted out that we were doing this.
Manfro?
Tripp Manfro at PFAC51. So we're going to incorporate a little mailbag into the hot spot here. Ask Doc about the two football games on the Big Ten Network for each of the 18 Big Ten teams in the fall of 2024. I think he's asking, will each team be on BTN twice, all 18 teams this fall?
Yeah, that's their requirement. So an Ohio State, a Washington, a UCLA, and Iowa, everybody has to go on BTN twice. And one of them has to be a conference game. So that's why a lot of times you'll see Ohio State at Rutgers at night on BTN, you know, in the past, or somebody like that. It's like, well, we can, you know, make it a big deal when they hop on. But yeah, they have to do that. And Peacock, there's no mandate, but Peacock gets its choice too. And in fact, in the past, what they've done is decided, you know, like there's one game, it was like Ohio State Purdue last year that they played, that really would have made more sense for NBC, but they moved it to Peacock, you know, because they had that choice.
Yeah.
And that's what they decided to do. So yeah, what we should be getting some, my guess is that we're going to be getting some Friday night games fairly shortly, because that needs to be out there. And then, and we're about a month away or so from getting like the first 3 weeks and special games too. So yeah, it's coming before you know it.
That's like
Amazing
Christmas.
Next week.
It's like Christmas for Tripp. He loves the schedule releases. He lives for that. So glad I was able to get that in. Hopefully I'll let him know that you provided us with the answer and he can stop asking me that on the mailbag. I should have you as a guest on the mailbag for questions like from Tripp that I can't answer.
Manfro was a staple on the old on Iowa podcast and hits me up on my mailbag quite a bit too. So yes, yeah. I can help answer some of those questions.
Life comes full circle, as we like to say. It finds a way. And it's found a way to the end of this podcast, miraculously. We've been on for about an hour and a half, and we always say we're going to hold it to an hour. But so much to talk about with Iowa sports every week, and we appreciate all of you guys listening. We certainly appreciate the sponsors. We get everything, Scott. I think we got everything, right?
Yeah, I think we're good. You know,
if we miss something, we apologize. We'll get it next week.
Or I mean, we're missing something that's going to happen at like 3 o'clock or 4 in the afternoon today that we don't know yet. But we'll be like, oh, see, this is what happens every time, you know. So
it may not even be that long. It may be as soon as we sign off.
Yeah, that's a staple for podcasting.
And if something like that happens, we'll laugh about it next week and touch on it then. So please come back next week for the Hotspot podcast with Scott and I, and we'll have plenty to talk about, plenty of stuff going on, transfer portal, NFL draft recap, all that good stuff coming up. So please come back. Listen to us next week, and we appreciate you listening to us this week. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to everybody out there. Enjoy the draft, and we will talk to you next week. Say goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Scott.